morning, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to WNRN and the Wake Up Call, especially Harrisonburg's 95.1 for being with us here on Sunday morning. And today's programming also supported by Fixin' Disposal. Dixon Disposal, family owned and operated for 40 years. Dixon Disposal works to promote green awareness. Dixon offers all-in-one can recycling, so you won't have to spend time sorting or trying to figure out items that are recyclable. These recyclable items will not end up in the landfill. For more information, all-in-one can recycling, it's DixonDisposal.com or 978-2111. All right, today we're going to do a little sort of local history. Our guest today, Barbara Norton. Barbara, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being here with us.
I love coming on your show.
Well, thank you. Barbara is an author and investigative reporter. You've been on in the past a couple times.
Oh, a bunch of times. Usually talking about my consuming passion, the disappeared Pat Collins mystery. But not today.
Not today. I may ask you a question about that a little on. You were coming on, I was like, ooh, I wonder what's ever happened to the Pat Collins mystery.
My calling in life.
But we'll get into that a little bit later if that question pops into my head a little later in the hour. Again, Barbara Norton here, our guest today on the Wake Up Call. Thank you for listening to WNRN. So the history of Swannanoa. There's certainly a variety of, you know, however long people have been living in our area, you know, Swannanoa, it's that that castle on top of Afton Mountain.
Mm. It's so strange at Swannanoa. So strange. And the best news of all for listeners who don't have any idea what we're talking about is that the owners, Phil Delaney and his wife, are now periodically opening it to the public for tours. In fact, they opened it the first weekend of this month, which makes me really wish that I had seen that at the time. I would have been up there maybe 2 days in a row, but I gather they're going to be doing that continuing on a regular basis. When you, just so people will know, start mentally picturing what we're talking about, picture driving up 250 and you arrive at the top of Afton Mountain. You're crossing over the mountain, and to your right, if you go north, you're on the Skyline Drive. To your left, if you go south, you're on the Blue Ridge Parkway. So you would turn left and continue down about, I would say, maybe a mile. Now, it used to have a sign saying, Swannanoa, University of Science and Knowledge, which would really be a startling thing to see if you had no idea it was coming up. University of Science and Philosophy. And so if you turn right there, though, of course, the Delaneys would not like you to turn right there if it's not open for visitors, and go down a long driveway with big trees towering over you, at the end you come out at an absolutely astonishing sight. It's an Italianate marble palace. It was built in 1912 by Major Dooley and his wife Sally May of Richmond. For those of you who know what Maymont is, that's the wonderful, wonderful old mansion in the heart of Richmond. He was a railroad tycoon, and they built this as kind of their summer place back at the turn of the century. So in 1912, it was open. 300 artisans had worked on it. Took 8 years to build it. And it's absolutely magnificent. Unfortunately, of course, 100 years later, without having been kept up really, really well all this time, it's not in that great a condition in many respects, but it's still absolutely majestic. Anyway, what made Swannanoa interesting was when it became the home of a very strange couple named Walter and Lau Russell in 1947.
Hang on a second.
Yes.
Talking again, Barbara Norden, our guest today, author and investigative reporter, we're talking about Swannanoa, a little sort of local history, whether you're listening from Harrisonburg or Richmond. Go back to the beginning.
Okay.
You talk about it was built in 1912, and it goes, at some point, Walter Russell and his wife Lau take over that spot. But do you know about the time period between the 1912 and before the Russells take over?
I do indeed, and I'm so glad you asked about that, because to me, in a way, that's kind of the coolest part of its history. The Dooleys died in 1922. They did not, only 10 years after they had finished it. And at first, it was taken up as a country club. It was going to be, you know, a very, you know, swanky kind of country club / men's hunting lodge kind of place. Apparently, Calvin Coolidge had Thanksgiving dinner there in 1928, so this is timely. And though Lau Russell later said it was his summer White House, it sounds more like he was there once for dinner. But it fell into, I guess, bankruptcy by 1932. This country club never took off. I mean, really, in those days, this was pretty much the middle of nowhere. We're talking about the Depression, John Walton era, all that stuff. Well, it became empty, and hobos would come through. And apparently, from an article in Seville from years ago, I know that people in Nelson and Augusta County can remember roller skating through there on those big marble floors as children. So it was like when Monticello was deserted, you know, when the Levees had to let go or whatever, and UVA students would ride their horses up there and just wander. Can you imagine wandering Monticello, you know, in the middle of the night, places wide open? Well, it was the same way at Swannanoa, this kind of spooky, big marble palace up there on the mountain, completely deserted. And what always astounds everybody is at the landing of this grand marble staircase and the huge, beautiful entry foyer. Well, it's not a foyer, it's just a huge entry hall, is this gigantic Tiffany window of Mrs. Dooley and the gardener, whatever. All those years, that window was never damaged. So the Russells met and married in 1948. He was 33 years older than she, and he quickly dumped his wife of 55 years after he met her and renamed her. Her name was Daisy. She was English. They met in New York. He decided that she was an incarnation of Lao Tzu or something like that, so he named her Lao. Well, the story is that on their honeymoon, somehow one of them had a vision of Jesus Christ hovering over the Blue Ridge, and they kind of set off to find it. And imagine pulling up in 1948, coming across Swannanoa. Now, the true story, knowing them as I just do by their history, they probably had been told it was there and it was empty and they could buy it cheap or rent it cheap. But anyway, she says that when they found it, it was basically knee deep in mud inside and stuff like that. I mean, it was really decrepit. The owners, the Skyline Corporation or whatever they were calling themselves at that point, Swannanoa Skyline, they were willing to rent it. So the Russells rented it on a lengthy lease. It actually went to 2002. And they moved in. Now, they were really, really off the wall. Walter Russell had been a respected sculptor, particularly. He'd also been an illustrator, and he'd been an architect. He had had quite a career in New York. And they got together, and boy, talk about synergy. They started hatching really kind of, well, really weird theories about physics and the world. And
we are talking with Barbara Norden here on WNRN Wake Up Call about Swannanoa, a little local history from our area, Swannanoa on top of Afton Mountain. This is WNRN Independent Music Radio. Thanks so much for being with us. Barbara, there's, you know, we have this, the history of WNRN from WNRN goes back about 14 or 15 years. Swannanoa goes all the way back to 1912. We're into the part about talking about Walter Russell and his wife, Lau. Keep going with the change in the husband's, how the husband changes his wife's name. But I don't want to get too far into, I don't want to go all the way from 1912 to 2012 without doing some of the history here, but the changing in the wife's name. You were talking about how he changed the wife from Daisy to Lau.
Mm-hmm. They were quite a couple. She was very, very attractive. A young woman who'd come from England. She was some kind of sort of health journalist in New York. And they met, and he told a New York journalist that after 55 years of marriage, a man had a right to be happy. So they got together. Boy, I guess that was a match made in heaven. And when they found Swannanoa and moved in, they really took off. They eventually, about 10 years later, they gave birth to the University of Science and Philosophy, which was based at Swannanoa, and began attracting followers from literally all over the world. In fact, I'll talk in a minute about getting a behind-the-scenes glimpse of life there. They had a study upstairs with a picture of a Nigerian chief in it, and I asked about it, and it turns out that Nigeria was thick with Russell followers. But anyway, if you would go there, once they started opening it for tours, Walter Russell died in 1963. So the university was well underway by then. Lau took over. And they began, I don't know at what point, probably somewhere in the 60s or 70s, they began opening for tours. And when I moved here in 82, you could always start a conversation over dinner with people about what they heard on their tour of Swannanoa. You'd go up there. There's park. You'd park out front. You'd go up to the door. You'd pay your $3. And some University of Science and Philosophy student, in quotes, would be your tour guide. And usually they were kind of wan-looking young women and kind of very plainly dressed and looking a little bit freaked out. And everyone would have been told, no matter when they went on their tour, that John Denver had arrived just a couple of weeks earlier. He had landed in a helicopter
on
the lawn.
John Denver, the musician?
The musician, yes. Two celebrity followers were Dennis Weaver, of Chester of Gunsmoke fame, and John Denver's, allegedly Shirley MacLaine was there at one point. But no matter, you know, you could go years apart and you could still hear that John Denver had just arrived there. And you would get the tour of the downstairs, and the downstairs rooms were filled with like the dining room around the top of the walls were these kind of psychedelic paintings. It looked like something, you know, your college roommate did on acid. And those were Walter Russell's depictions of different physical laws. You know, he rewrote the periodic table in spiral form. He claimed to have discovered elements in the periodic table that had always been there. And he was really off the wall. He was also, unfortunately, apparently something of a white supremacist. Well, he was apparently in some of his writing a white supremacist. So he was wacky. But I went on a tour once, and I walked in the front hall, and this was when Lau was still alive. She died in 88. And I was standing around in the entry hall, and suddenly she appears at the top of the stairs in this, you know, kind of flowing gold, you know, bathrobe. And she pauses there very theatrically and says, "Oh, visitors." And I'm thinking, yeah, you have a parking lot out front and you charge $3 admission and you're open for tours. Yep, you've got visitors here today. So she descended the stairs and sat in front of this big fireplace in the entrance hall, and her followers gathered around at her feet. You know, she really had followers. So you could be routed through the rooms. You could buy their various books and pamphlets. They would show you a film about the Russells, and they would make all kinds of claims like, President so-and-so, Mr. Russell sent his sculpture of, you know, so-and-so to the White House, and the White House was so appreciative. And then you're seeing in a display case like this form letter saying, "Dear Mr. Russell, we are in receipt of the statue you sent. Thank you very much."
Now, Barbara, we're talking about the Russells and sort of the University of Science and Philosophy.
Yes.
That's where we're getting with how people are, why people are coming in. That's why John Denver would be there. That's why Dennis Weaver would be there. Is the, I guess it's not, that's one of the questions that I found in doing my homework, is the religion or cult versus the Russells at Swannanoa. Again, we are talking about the history of Swannanoa, not just the building and the property, but also the people who were there, who lived at Swannanoa. Our guest today, Barbara Norden, author and reporter. 11:18 here on the Wake Up Call.
This is your Sunday morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. The Wake Up Call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstand Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And mostly cloudy and breezy today, highs in the upper 40s, clear tonight, lows in the 30s, and mostly sunny tomorrow, highs near 55. Right now it's 37 in the valley, 36 in Lynchburg, 40 in Richmond, and 25 in Charlottesville. Let me take time and also thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 434-296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. Again, our guest today, Barbara Norden, local author, talking about the history of Swannanoa. A little local history in our area. You can find Swannanoa. Is it a castle, Barbara?
It's a palace.
A palace.
It's a palace, yeah.
At the time of Afton Mountain, I think the zip code, or not the zip code, but the exit is about 96 on I-64.
Yeah, something like that. You take the Waynesboro exit off 64, or you just, you know, go straight over on 250, and you come up on the top of the mountain there, and you can go north on the Skyline Drive or south on the Blue Ridge Parkway. So go south, turn left, and go about, I'd say, a mile or so, and it's on the right.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's got 52 rooms. Apparently, I've also been looking at an article by Chris Edwards McNett, who used to live here. She wrote this for the Washington Post, and it's a replica of the Villa de' Medici in Rome. It's 52 rooms, white Georgian marble. And it is absolutely stunning and very, very interesting inside. When I went, several times. You know, to me, the perfect tour to take a visitor to Charlottesville on would be Swannanoa and Monticello.
Why did this interest you so much?
Well, I think you've probably figured out that I really love strange, weird places. I I love unsolved mysteries. I love oddities. And when I found out about Swannanoa, I couldn't get there quick enough.
Now, it cost, again, to go back to the beginning a little bit, I'm going to try and go back and forth, because the Russells are sort of like the, they're the most odd part of Swannanoa. But my memory from my homework for this topic, again, Swannanoa here at the top of Acton Mountain, it took almost a decade to build from 1912. It took a decade at $500,000 at that time. Are those the right
I don't
figures?
Know about the price. I know that it took 8 years and apparently 300 artisans worked on it. It's got details like there's a, you know, a kind of concealed door in the dining room, just that, you know, the way the wall and the wallpaper go across it, it's hard for you to see it, but a door that, you know, you can go into the big kitchen on the other side. It's got an elevator, an Otis elevator, which is has mirrors in it. Apparently that helps with claustrophobia. Now, when I think when Walter Russell died in 63 or whenever, the elevator stopped working. Maybe his spirit never wanted it to work again. I don't know. There was a fascinating smoking room with a big kind of Moroccan thing hanging from the middle of the from the ceiling, hanging down in the room, that was apparently an incense burner. That and the men would go in there after dinner and smoke, and you know, just exquisite details, just beautiful.
And then once, again, the name of the original builders.
The Dooleys.
The Dooleys. Once they passed away, the property was purchased by an organization.
Yes, and actually the original investors, I think there were 9 men who went in and put this corporation together, and they bought 700 acres up there on Afton Mountain. So it was much more than just Swannanoa. But after the Depression era, you know, falling apart, and they finally sold it. Maybe they bought it for $75,000. I guess that the corporation they put together in, I think, about 1944, was able to buy it for $75,000. The country club had just gone belly up. And
this
then
is Skyline Swannanoa, yeah. Incorporated.
Yeah, that's what they eventually ended up as. And the original investors, Sons then, which came down to, interestingly enough, Wendell Wood, one of the main developers in this area, and Phil Delaney. They were the ones who ended up. Now, Phil Delaney has a cousin in Culpeper who became a student at the University of Science and Philosophy. So he became very involved with the Russells. Phil Delaney never did get involved with the Russells particularly. He was just their landlord. And the university moved out. They moved down the mountain to Swannanoa in about 98.
And we are talking with Barbara Norden here about the history of Swannanoa, the palace. Is that what the word you used?
They called it the palace, yes.
The palace atop of Afton Mountain. Again, 1125 here on the wake-up call. Let me take a moment and thank WHTJ, Charlottesville's local PBS TV station. Information about PBS and local programming can be found at ideastations.org. WHTJ programming can be seen in the Richmond area on WCVE TV. All right, back with Barbara talking about Swannanoa. Barbara, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago, and again, back to Walter Russell and his wife. Let's see, the University of Science and Philosophy. When I'm reading some of the articles you provided for me, someone discussed whether or not this was a religion or a cult. And the differences being that a religion is brought forth, it's the message, is that the word that I want?
The message?
Message, thank you. And then versus the cult, which is the messenger.
Yeah, Jonathan Fox, back in 96 in Seville, wrote a wonderful, wonderful cover story. And he had interviewed Harry Gamble, who from UVA's Department of Religious Studies. And Gamble said, it's what we call a theosophical cult. The dedicated few, Gamble says, that journey to Swannanoa or send away for their home study course are not unlike adherents of other cults. They're highly individualistic, creative, and ostensibly intelligent, put off by traditional ideas, dogmas, and rituals. But much of the attraction is simply the novelty of the supposed modernism. So, you know, Walter Russell got hit by lightning in 1921, and he said that all the secrets of the universe were revealed to him at that point. So in their home study course, which I can't remember the price for, but that's one reason it was so big in Nigeria. They were, you know, they were studying
by
mail.
It wasn't that much, actually. It was like $200 or something.
Yeah, but remember, we're talking like 1970, 1980. Dollars.
Fair enough.
Yeah. They went into all their philosophy and their beliefs about the physics of the universe. And one of the things I like the most about them is they refer to death as refolding. So they would talk about Lao refolded in 1988, which sounds like some kind of origami, you know, she refolded.
Hey, Barbara Norton here in the studio with us here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, talking about the history of Swannanoa and sort of the major part of that being the Russells, Walter Russell and his wife, Lau, cosmic messengers.
Yes. Cosmic messengers. Oh, and it felt so cosmic up there. I haven't said yet, but they had what, you know, back in the Dooley's days must have been staggeringly beautiful terraced gardens in the back with this marble portico stretching across the back of the property. And now those had long since fallen into disrepair. But when you would go there, there's these two tower rooms, these turrets at the very top, and they had a stereo up there that would waft this kind of otherworldly music. So you'd be wandering the grounds with this woo music going on. And I'll tell you, a visit to Swannanoa was just, I can't imagine a better way to spend a Saturday afternoon than to go to Swannanoa.
But you can't go now.
Only when the Delaneys, which I think is wonderful that they're doing this, they are returning to having some open hours. There's always talk of it being turned into a bed and breakfast. This has been going on for years, but it would cost, I'm betting it would cost at least $1 million to get it up to code and to renovate enough to have guest rooms and stuff. But that would be fabulous. Now, you can rent it for weddings and stuff. So anyone out there wanting a really cool setting for a wedding, this is your ticket, Swannanoa.
Barbara, you talked about how you like oddities and strange things. And I guess that a lot of that plays here in our area.
Yeah.
So we know that the building itself unusual. 52 rooms, you said, and two turrets. I guess built in a, you know, took forever to build, 8 years or so back in 1912, an excessive amount of money at that time. And now we, here we are to Walter Russell. Is it odd just because of his religious aspect? I mean, wanting to bring about the University of Science and Philosophy?
Well, they did. They did have kind of a cult-like aura up there.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I bring that up because if that's what makes it weird, then there are many people who might find Liberty University to be strange. Or is it, what's the one down in Virginia Beach?
Oh, Pat Robertson, Regent University.
Regent, thank you.
Yeah.
But there are some people, depending on your current... you know, your personal beliefs of religion and how that fits into current daily life. Is it odd in that sense?
No, it's not. It's odd like, you know, the Monroe Institute, I would not describe as cult-like. But boy, Master Charles down the road, synchronicity, oh my God. Wacky, wacky, wacky. I put, and I think Yogaville has some real strong elements. If you get behind the scenes at all at Yogaville, I think you come up with some pretty flaky stuff. You know, the Monroe Institute is dedicated to helping people have out-of-body experiences. And then you've got good old Master Charles down the road at Synchronicity. And that it's that kind of place. I think that there's something about this region that really does, which is one reason I love it so much. But Swannanoa, it's definitely more than the Russells. I think it's the shock of coming across this beautiful Italianate villa up there on Afton Mountain, just at the end of this long driveway, and the turrets and the old, you know, fallen into neglect terraced gardens. And it's, I got behind the scenes there in 1990, I owned a business that was an absolute abject failure. I owned a temp agency in Charlottesville, and I was so utterly miserable, I kept kind of running away from life. And so one afternoon, I had just gotten this new Hyundai, back when Hyundais were just like tin cans. And all I wanted to do was drive to the valley. I just wanted to run away. So of course, I went to Swannanoa. And I paid my admission, and I went in, and I was the only one there, I guess, because I was alone with the tour guide. And I kept hinting how much I would just love to see the upstairs. And so she lets me across the rope, and we're going up the stairs, and she kept saying, I don't know why I'm doing this. And I said, as I'm getting to see the upstairs in Lau Russell's bedroom, of course she was dead by then, and she even let me go up into the turret, which is like these little spiral steps covered with dead flies. And I said, I am so stressed out that I would even come here and do like maid work for free occasionally if you would let me behind the scenes. I mean, that's how bad I wanted to see behind the scenes. And she said, oh, well, that's it. So I went back to Charlottesville, and she called me up like the next week and said, my husband and I want to go to a wedding over Memorial Day. Would you be willing to come work for one day? I said, oh, my God, would I? I was in heaven. So I drive up there like the Saturday Memorial Day weekend. Well, everybody listening who lives actually in Charlottesville, imagine this, Harrisonburg and Richmond. If there's any fog anywhere within 100 miles, it's going to be on Afton Mountain. So I'm crossing Afton Mountain, you know, driving up the mountain, and wisps of fog, thick fog, and I turn off, and I drive down the parkway, and I go down the long driveway, and I go in the big, heavy front door. So for one day, for 8 hours, for $5 an hour, I got to take the, like, admission, sell the tickets. Every time someone would come in the front door, it's this kind of dark, foggy day, wisps of fog would come into the entry hall. And during that time, the tour guide who was there, when she wasn't running a tour, which wasn't very often, it wasn't exactly a stampede. It was no Monticello, let's put it that way. She would tell me about the schism within the University of Science and Philosophy. Now that Lau was dead, there was a big rupture, and it like wither Swannanoa, wither the University of Science and Philosophy. But during that day, there was a woman that apparently Lau had rescued from the streets of New York way, way, way back, who had been her abject, devoted friend and follower, who lived in a bedroom off the kitchen. This very meek young woman, or older woman, very meek woman, lived back there and took care of Lau's Scottish terriers. And she, at one point during the day, she kind of crept out and handed me my paycheck. I didn't want to cash it because it was a check from the University of Science and Philosophy. And so I got to spend that day behind the scenes and hearing like the scuttlebutt going on politically. But the best part, Rick, was at the end of the day at 5 o'clock, we went from room to room and we would pin the big, thick velvet draperies shut across every huge window with these big safety pins. It was so spooky. It was really cool. One of the best days of my life, I swear.
11:37 here on the Wake Up Call. We're talking about the history of Swannanoa. 100 years now, 1912.
100 years.
2012. Again, our guest, Barbara Norden. She's a local author and investigative reporter. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Market Tiger Fuels and by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstand Thursday. Here's Rick on what you can find on this week's Hook.
And folks who know this area well tell what they love about the holidays around here. The Hook shares information on getting festival and festive while keeping it local. How much money would it take to make you happy? Some research suggests it might be less than you think. And what does one apartment complex have so much higher water bills than others around town? The Hook. It's a free dollar holiday gift. And support for WNRN comes from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. This holiday season, Blue Ridge has adventure gifts, including water bottles, multitask, backpacks, mittens, gloves, and snow hacks. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville and at two locations in Richmond. For more information, it's brms.com. Our guest, Barbara Norden. Barbara, you know, still several interesting stories about Swannanoa. There's an issue to talk about in just a moment about Lau's. What was the
toy
phrase?
Boy.
Yes, toy boy. And I want to get into that in just a minute or so. But having you in the studio, I want to know if there's any update on Pat Collins. For those who aren't familiar, Pat Collins sort of like one of the
absolutely legendary local unsolved mystery.
And you did a lot of work on this and trying to solve the answer. And just if people will listen, I think many of us who have heard you talk about this or read your articles, let's take 3 or 4 minutes to talk about Pat Collins for just a moment.
Pat Collins was a brand new graduate student. Started in January 1986 in physiology at UVA. Came here from UVA and from California, and disappeared. The last time we can pin him down as being alive was Saturday, March 23rd, I guess, 1986, at an early forerunner of an ATM machine at the Commonwealth Center at the intersection of, Market and Fifth Ridge Street downtown. It disappeared into thin air. And what's so absolutely stomach turning about this is that UVA really refused to mount any kind of serious investigation, kept insisting he had walked away from his life, which his frantic family in California kept insisting he hadn't. And it's clear that Pat hadn't walked away from his life any more than you or I would if we disappeared. This has become, for me, one of the most shameful chapters in UVA's history. I did get an email, interestingly enough, just actually about a month ago from a woman who's a volunteer for Virginia in a network that keeps up on missing persons cases, said that she had contacted the UVA police. And since the UVA police, along with an FBI agent, Ed Salzbach, were kind of the culprits in terms of botching this investigation, such as it was, just to the point where UVA police lied about the investigation very transparently. They had contacted UVA police wanting to collect some familial DNA so they could have that in their database. UVA police just blew them off. Well, of course they did. The last thing they want is for anyone to identify the remains of Pat Collins, because that would prove that, as Ed Salzbach, the FBI agent himself, said from the first, he always figured Pat had been murdered. It's clear Pat was murdered. I have strong suspicions that he met someone probably in the locker room at Mem Gym, which back then was a very aggressive cruising ground that went beyond all limits in terms of kind of stalking at times behavior in that locker room among some of the kind of predatory men who hung out there. I suspect Pat met someone like that. I think he was edging out of the closet. I also have some pretty strong queasy feelings about two fellow graduate students, one of whom is a professor now at Northwestern and the other is a PhD MD at Mayo Clinic. I know the guy at Mayo Clinic lied to me and later admitted he'd lied to me about whether he'd been with Pat on a key occasion. And that occasion was at the cabin in the Poconos owned by the guy who's now at Northwestern, or owned by his family. And I think something had to have happened during that weekend.
Do you expect to, I mean, is this a project that you still work on?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Do you feel that you've sold everything you can do now and it's just set aside?
What I'm doing, Rick, is I am writing, doesn't sound like I'm doing much, but I'm writing a memoir, and I'm hoping that if I can publish this memoir, I can get whoever publishes it interested in kind of the second part of my life, which was blossoming as an investigative reporter. And it sounds like, oh, who would ever want to publish a memoir about, you know, Barbara Norton? Well, it's that some very, just absolutely, utterly bizarre stuff happened to me when I was quite young that caused me to have 25 years worth of writer's block. And when I blew through that, when I confronted what had happened 25 years later, I immediately blossomed as a writer, started doing the Fearless Consumer column in 1996 for Seville, and right after that, literally this time of year, November of 96, I delved into Pat Collins, because I had worked on the support staff in physiology after Pat had disappeared. But I was working with the very few people who had known him during his short time in Charlottesville. I had always been fascinated by his disappearance. So there I was in the physiology department. I called Hawes Spencer, the editor of Seville, now of Hookup, one morning and said he had thought about writing about Pat. He had gotten started. And I said, whatever happened to that story? And he said, well, kind of didn't go anywhere. And I said, well, I'm the person to write about it. Can I have it? And he said, yep, it's yours. And ever since, it's been my consuming passion. Makes me crazy.
Barbara Norton here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, talking just a few minutes about a topic that you've been covering for quite some time now. I know you've been on this show with me once or twice in the past, sort of talking about Pat Collins and the unsolved mystery of what happened Thanks for giving me an update on that. Can people go back? I mean, for those who haven't heard this before, where does someone who's listening now go back?
You just go to, I think the URL is just patcollinscase.com. Now, or you can always just Google what happened to Pat Collins. I created a WikiLeaks type website. On the 25th anniversary, I did extensive coverage of the Hook 2 years ago next March, or maybe 3 years ago. And I uploaded there all the documents. I have Pat's answering machine tape on that site. I have, which in itself is very, very weird. And I uploaded the documents that, of course, UVA never thought would someday be on a website being read by the public. They are just egregious in their shameless treatment of his family in California. There was a horrible ego clash between these shameless wannabe cops at the UVA police, which they're wannabe cops now, but back in 1986, I'll tell you, they were security guards, basically, who desperately wanted to get on the city or county police force.
All right, so what's the URL again you said?
It's patcollinscase.com. Pat's stepfather was an actual big city cop, retired from California. They hated him. And every time Clarence Shannon suggested something like, well, don't you want to take fingerprints? No. Mr. Shannon, we've got this in hand. Thanks.
All right, check that out. It's maybe sometime in the future we'll have Barbara back on to talk about that. I just wanted to do a little catch-up on where that stood. Again, Barbara Norden, our guest today. We're talking about the history of Swannanoa. And before I ask that question, mentioned Boy Toy of Lau Russell. Sam Beiser?
Yes, B-I-S-E-R. Everybody Google that name immediately. He's a total fraud.
Now, what makes you say that?
Well, he only has been, he's had about, I think, about 500 company names and counting. He's had multiple bankruptcies. The post office was investigating him, declared him someone who was committing fraud by the mail. He was here in Charlottesville back in the 80s. He ran a thing out on West Rio Road called Healthview Newsletter. And through this newsletter, he was selling these completely fraud. Well, he was selling them. The problem was not only were they just completely bogus, these health products, but then a lot of the times he never even shipped them. He had hundreds of customers who would send hundreds of dollars for these products, and he would never even ship them. So he had lots and lots of cases against him. Creditors all over Central Virginia, usually printing places, trying to sue him. But then he would just declare bankruptcy and get out of town. Well, he got on to Lau Russell. She was 45 years older than he, and he moved in with her, and he was living there. Now, believe me, the University of Science and Philosophy people were over on the sidelines chewing their nails. They were just frantic at the influence he had over her. And when she died in 1988, he says that the day of the funeral, they confronted him at the front door and handed him a bag with his pajamas and underpants in it and kicked him out. He sued them. He said that she had intended to leave him everything and that they had burned her handwritten will.
That's what Mr. Beiser said.
That's what he said.
And they never actually found any paper saying that.
He said they'd burned it. I don't know whether it existed or not. He sued him for $17 million and then he just kind of went away. Probably their lawyers helped him understand that he was going to be in major trouble if he went further with that.
11:50 here on the Wake Up Call, talking with our guest today, Barbara Norden. Let me take a moment and thanks L. Oppelman for their support of WNRN, serving Lynchburg for 122 years. In addition to loans, L. Oppelman deals in jewelry, musical instruments, rifles, and handguns, as well as game systems, TVs, cameras, and tools, with new information arriving every day. This holiday season, you can take advantage of L. Oppelman's layaway plan and get a head start on your Christmas list. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. And about 10 minutes left on our local show today. At noon, it's Les Temps Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. The roots of alternative is needed because you can't understand where we are now without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue, only here on WNRN. All right, Barbara, we were talking about Sam Beiser. Scam artist or love for Lau? I mean, he says one thing, and you seem to have automatically made your decision as to scam artist, and the folks at the University of Science and Philosophy believe scam artist. But were there anyone who said, you know, no, what? He may have had unusual behavior or personality, but it was truly love.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to picture him. Of course, he swore that they were soulmates. He has an extensive history, very well documented, of criminal activities stretching back to the 80s. And I imagine that what's left of the university is mighty unhappy, because after decamping suddenly to Southern California back in the 90s, he has returned. He's in Waynesboro, right where they are. He's back in Waynesboro. And now he has, if you Google Sam Beiser, oh my God, there is a heavenly website. He refers to himself there on that website as legendary health journalist. And now his thing is he has products that will cure bad genetics. So if you have bad genes, he's got remedies for you that you can order. And I'm sure it's just a matter of time before, I hope Hawes will do some kind of investigative piece on this in The Hook, because it's crying out for investigation.
Again, Barbara Norden here talking about the history of Swannanoa. That's here in Central Virginia. You can find the palace of Swannanoa here at the top of Afton Mountain. You know, one of the things that I found interesting was that Walter Russell, again, founder of University of Science and Philosophy at Swannanoa, at some point he was asked about his background, and he said that he was from another planet.
Yeah, a planet that they've never found yet, Sirius.
Right, because Sirius is not a planet. Sirius is a star, correct?
That's what I'm thinking.
But, you know, he wasn't just talking about, you said he was struck by lightning, and that sort of enlightened him as
yeah.
to all these things that he decided to teach others. But he said that he was actually from another planet who came here to share this knowledge with us.
Yeah, and I have no trouble believing. You know, I believe there's a billion planets with human life, and I'm a big believer in reincarnation. So God only knows which planets various ones of us have touched down on. Sirius may be a big planet in another galaxy, a billion miles, a billion light years from here. But the so-called truths that he came to enlighten us about just don't hold water with, you know, physical science. He made a big deal about this spiral periodic table, and when I think Jonathan Fox in Seville was following up on that with someone, a physicist or something at UVA, he said, well, you know, you can arrange a periodic table a bunch of different ways. It doesn't change the nature of it. And again, he had claimed to have discovered Neptunium and plutonium, and they had been there all along, stuff like that. So his stuff just didn't really pan out scientifically.
Talking about Swannanoa and the University of Science and Philosophy, Barbara, does that university still exist?
It does. I looked at their website the other day. I couldn't see any evidence that they're offering the home study course anymore. They've gone through a number of directors, including one of those Nigerian chiefs, and it sounds like it's a very, very reduced operation. Now, they do, I believe, still probably sponsor speakers. They were still doing that, not so much at Swan and Noah, but like at the that Holiday Inn maybe up there at the top of the mountain, which Phil Delaney also owns. You know, they have, you know, gatherings for people who were attached to the university. But it sounds like once they lost Swan and Noah, I suspect that they really dwindled down after that. Swan and Noah was such a part of, and the Russells. So I think once Lau died in 1988, it probably got harder and harder to sustain.
Do you believe, or is it known that that the boy toy, Sam Beiser, was he trying to continue?
No, he. I don't think he had. Though I think he. That was one of his claims. I think that she wanted him to have everything. Of course, he couldn't have had Swan and Noah because they were just renting it. And apparently, the university claims that she loaned him $1.7 million. I think that was one of their claims, that she had loaned him over $1 million that, of course, they never saw again. So whether he had designs on it or not, boy, they made sure that that didn't happen. He mainly is interested in defrauding people out of money. And I feel totally safe saying that. The reason I glommed onto him was when I owned the temp agency that I was so miserable about owning during that period. I had sent an employee to work there at Healthview Newsletter. He was always running these wacky want ads. And the employee called me up very distressed and said, you know, they're just telling me to take these calls and take these orders, even though the other employees tell me like they're completely fraudulent and they don't actually mail them out. And so I pulled her, you know. But later on, I told my friend Chris Edwards McNett at the Observer. She's long gone. She's in Harrisonburg, and she did a series of articles on Sam Beiser that were just fascinating.
Swannanoa, American Indian, means the land of beauty.
Mm.
And it is, for those of you who, I mean, we've been talking about it for the hour again with Barbara Norden, and whether or not you can actually find a time or a day to take a tour of the palace, there's a golf course up there that's wonderful.
Yeah, right down the road. Mm-hmm.
And it is called Swannanoa
yep.
Golf Course.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of when it was the country club?
No, I don't think there's any connection. I think that's probably just another part of the development that the Skyline Swannanoa Corporation did. I don't think there's any connection.
All right. Barbara, thank you so much for being
with
us.
Oh, Rick,
today.
This was wonderful.
I love doing shows on sort of local history and something like this. I mean, people, it's pretty easy to find out about Monticello. What a more difficult to find out about interesting places and topics such as Swannanoa.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Rick.
Again, it's Barbara Norden. She's a local author and investigative reporter. Forget, you can check out that Pat Collins. Google that. In the future, we'll be doing a show. David Toscano will be here. State legislative representative. We'll be doing our Christmas show. Santa Claus will be here calling the kids and reminding them to be well-behaved until Christmas shows up. Thanks, folks.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news. On newsstands Thursday, the wake-up call is also supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.